Come, spellweavers, reavers, rogues, and men-at-arms, and answer the call of adventure. Pick up your sword, your axe, your spellbook, your bow, your rulebook, and your dice, and join the forces of good in their eternal fight against vile monsters, conspiring min-maxers, horny bards, and blood-soaked murder hobos. Discover the treasure trove of role-playing games here on Rollin' Bones. My name is Ryan Howard, and I shall be your guide.
Good evening, boneheads, and welcome back to Rollin' Bones with Ryan Howard, where we are making old school young again. I'm your host and king of the boneheads, Ryan Howard, and I'm really excited about tonight because once again I have the wonky with me, Mr. Keelan Halverson, to those of you in the know, and we will be discussing all things horror and role-playing related. And we also have an exciting announcement for you at the end, so I hope you guys will stick with us this whole time. But really, we're going to be focusing this conversation on horror and role-playing games, since it is, you know, the season of the witch. It is October. Halloween is next week, and I will not be doing a show on Halloween because I have a young daughter who I'm going to take trick-or-treating. So this is going to be our Halloween special. I hope you guys will enjoy it. And with that in mind, remember to like, share, and subscribe if you do enjoy the show and want more people to discover it, more people to find out what we're doing here on Rollin' Bones. That's the best way to do so. You can also follow me and all of my various ramblings, like how I insisted that Cobra Kai is a prequel to Dragon Ball on X and Instagram. You can find those at Howard_RyanGreg. Here on YouTube, it's Rollin' Bones. Twitch is twitch.tv/RollinBonesRyan. And then Substack is RollinBones.substack.com. If you do enjoy my ramblings on role-playing games, you can find those in spades over on my Substack. That's the repository for all of my hot takes and many of my cold takes as well on role-playing games. So if you enjoy those articles, that's where you find them, rollinbones.substack.com. And if you feel so inclined to support the show by buying merchandise, you can do so over on TeePublic. The link to TeePublic is here in chat, and it will also be in the pinned comment with all of my other links for those of you who are watching this after the fact. So, without further ado, let's bring on the, honestly, one of my favorite people, not just one of my favorite guests, one of my favorite people in the role-playing industry. He is the one, the only, the wonky. Welcome back to Rollin' Bones.
Thank you for having me here. It is always such a pleasure to chat with you, my good friend. Oh, I'm excited for today's talk. We've got some goodies to delve into, isn't that right?
Absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely.
Boy. I even came with talking points and notes prepared. I'm prepared for something. Oh, you know I care.
Yeah, this is going to be one of those episodes where I'm going to say some spicy stuff. I'm pretty sure you're going to say some spicy stuff, too.
I don't do that.
Whenever I start talking about objective realities and start kind of like putting standards on stuff, that's when people really get upset with me. So those of you who get upset when I say stuff like that, buckle up.
Oh boy, hang on, Hannah. I'm excited. This is going to be fun.
So you and I have had this conversation off air a couple times and in a couple different kind of, you know, variations, but I'm going to present to you a theory of horror that I have, and I want your take on it, and then kind of, you know, to use this as a springboard for our discussion.
Perfect springboard. Absolutely. I love it. Yeah, that's a perfect way to get something like this started up. Heck yeah, spring it on me. What do we got going in your brain?
So my theory of horror is that horror involves humanity being confronted with its darkest elements and being brought to the point of near hopelessness, only for there to be a way presented out of the hopelessness that involves tremendous personal sacrifice.
I love that. I think that is a great summary of horror, especially in games. The one thing I would tweak personally, at least on that, is I think that a lot of the glory that can be achieved from the horror genre, because it is a high-risk, high-reward genre, I think that oftentimes when the players themselves are able to come up with their own innovative way out, I am a little bit notorious with my own group for, you know, leaving them alone in death traps to die. And, you know, if you can get out, awesome. I'm rooting for you. But if not, sucks to be you, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that it is the DM's job when running horror to necessarily coddle the players, because there is an inherent unlikableness towards the role you are not presented with, but, you know, portraying, you know? And what I mean by that is a lot of horror derives from harsh consequences to player actions and things of that nature. You know, when the bass drops and shit goes down, how you interact with the scene in play is inherently key to everything else that'll go on from there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could ramble on that for a minute. My bad.
Yeah, I'm like right there with you. There is kind of this aspect of I am not going to present the way out of the situation, you have to come up with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be okay with adding that as an addendum to my definition. But the way that I see horror, and this is me taking a very old school look at horror. This is horror as defined by Poe and Shelley and, you know, the progenitors of horror. In a horror story, you are looking at the darkest elements of humanity.
The only way
out of that is to confront it directly and to do something about it, which usually involves removing a piece of yourself.
Absolutely. I would wholeheartedly agree with that. It takes a lot of effort to muster up the courage to confront the big, bad, evil thing that is coming after you, you know? Mm-hmm. There's a deeply introspective element to horror as well on the vulnerability of the human condition, because oftentimes you're confronted with horrible, grotesque realities on what might befall your character, you know? You might get maimed, slaughtered, you know, whatever happens. Yeah. And with that, I mean, yeah.
And the reason why I feel like this is kind of a controversial take from both of us, I see a lot of horror, and there's one thing in particular that you and I have talked about in the past. There's one game in particular that's especially guilty of this. Call of Cthulhu.
Yes. I have.
Call of Cthulhu, so many keepers run Call of Cthulhu in a way that essentially guarantees, yeah, there's no solution here. You're just going to go insane and bad things are going to happen to you. There's no kind of like coming out the other side in most games of Call of Cthulhu. And that's kind of where I take issue. Even, you know, when you read Lovecraft, some of his characters don't make it out, but some of them do. They just are forever altered by the experience that they
a little worse for wear.
Yeah. It's but in the game, like so many GMs or keepers, as they're known in Call of Cthulhu, just revel in the no, there's no way out of this. You're gonna go insane whether you like it or not. And my friend Viktor Gorchev actually worded this the best. He said, when I play a game like Call of Cthulhu, I don't want to be some like dweeby professor that's going to pee his pants. I want to be like the cab driver who's seen some stuff, or I want to be, you know, like the World War One soldier who has kind of found himself thrust into this nightmare world.
For sure.
I don't feel that, you know, the notion that you can fight back or that you can rage against this onslaught of darkness that you're up against, I don't feel like that diminishes the horror at all. In fact, I think in a lot of ways it enhances
Yes.
The experience.
The analogy I like to use for that is Call of Cthulhu feels like a cake made of chocolate, not chocolate cake, meaning that the horror is supposed to be a supplementary additive that you sprinkle into something else. It is not the core foundation of what it is. Because what ends up happening from my own experiences with Call of Cthulhu games, which aren't too many, I've only played a couple of them, but from what I've seen is there is this instant expectation of you are going to be tormented, and even best case scenario, you end up crazy and mad and woohoo, and that's cool and all, but you go in with that expectation of a horrible, horrible outcome. But I think that oftentimes a lot of the driving motivation for good horror is that adventurous spirit that comes with high octane action, honestly. The best I've seen in the genre personally comes from Robert E. Howard's stories, because you see that perfect dichotomy between the horror and the opposing force against it. It can be a very unforgiving genre, but with that, you can earn this genuine feeling of triumph and victory like no other, because you're faced against such horrendous, insurmountable odds, and you found your own way out of it. You know, you dug yourself into a hole through one way or another, and you got to climb back out of it like a badass is the difference, though. And I see this repeatedly throughout the RPG spectrum. There isn't room for the victorious wonderment that comes after you fulfill an adventure. You know, you feel cool, you feel excited and hype for whatever's next. There's definitely room for all kinds of stories in the world, but it seems to be dominated by this almost kind of trolly, haha, you lose aspect. And while that is a good propellant forward, there needs to be some kind of attainable glories at the end, this, you know, real victory that you can achieve.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Another good example of this outside, I've actually got three examples that are outside the realm of role playing, but I feel can be directly tied back into the world of RPGs. The first one is Predator. Predator, it's an action movie, but it's a horror movie. And the main character, the main characters of Predator are these hardened, badass military guys who you have to imagine have seen everything under the sun, as far as just like the horrors of humanity are concerned. But they're confronted by an enemy that they can't see, an enemy that they can barely hurt. And it's just this kind of battle of attrition as Dutch in particular is just thrown up against the limits of all of his skills and resources until just the very end, where he has to literally stand alone against this thing. That is horrifying, and it works very well in that movie.
It works so well in that movie. I agree with you wholeheartedly, and it really actually emphasizes that adventurous spirit that is inherent within gaming just in general. That's kind of what we're here to do, is go be awesome adventurers, swing swords and kill orcs and shit like that, you know? That is the central core of what we're doing here. But like in Predator, as you said, it is that horrible unknown foe that's coming after you, picking you off one by one. And there's such a variety of scenes in the way they play out, because it's not always good. The evil, horrible repercussions of failure are enforced and followed through with, leaving this dwindling party of ever more desperate but brazen survivors who eventually, towards the end, when it's just Dutch alone, finally has his big face off. Now, that doesn't necessarily work so well in role-playing games, because you need to keep everyone involved unless you're doing some kind of a dropout one shot or something, which is fun, does have its place. But I think that's another important thing, is having good ways to introduce new characters is fundamental. I think that old school role-playing games in particular are the best engine for driving the horror genre forward, because it's already coupled within the fantasy, you know, space. But mm-hmm. from there, you can just add a little bit of a different lens shift. My favorite thing to call back to, I don't think we talked about it on podcast last time, is Balin's tomb from The Lord of the Rings, especially like if you're in the movie, is the perfect example for a scene that could easily turn into the perfect horror game. Because what you have happen is this hopeful start. Everything's excited. People band together throughout whatnots. They travel to the mountains, and then everything starts getting weird. And that's the most important thing, is when they enter the mines, things really start getting weird. Everyone's dead. It's abandoned. There's the empty spaces all around you. You are deep in the unknown places. No one has any real knowledge of what's going on here. And then from the point, if you take away the plot armor of a mithril shirt, say Frodo died.
Yep.
Think of what happens after that. That is the horror. That is the calamity. It's when you take that plot armor away, that little bit of forgiveness from the punch coming towards the players. And I'm not necessarily saying adversarial DM, that's how you got to do it. But there is that risk reward. Dice are there for a reason. And, you know, I guess I am a very adversarial DM. I have no problem killing people's characters by the score. But
yeah, and that's, I mean, that's all part of the challenge of role-playing games. As a GM, you should be playing to win, because it's only when you are playing to win that your characters really like have this sense of accomplishment when they come out the other side. Players can tell when you pull your punches, and so you yes. want to give them the fight of their lives, and they do have the advantage over you. There's more of them than there are of you. So
agreed.
You know, they can put their brains together, whereas you have to come up with stuff on the fly. So it behooves you as a game master to always play as if you are trying to beat the players, because they have that advantage over you, and because that's how you get the most out of this game, is, you know, by putting up an actual challenge, so that yeah, by the end they have won at D&D, because yes, you can win.
It's true. Diminishing the struggle just diminishes the reward that they hopefully will eventually get the payoff for. And that's a key thing in the horror genre, is it's not guaranteed that that will happen. You know, there is that the bad things happen, you know, the doom spiral starts, the avalanche crumbles down, and everyone gets caught up in it. Sometimes that is the reality, but more often than not, you end up with these deeply heroic moments where the big thing I like about horror, and I guess this is what really rings true to it, is it provides a space for genuine heroic behavior to take place, because oftentimes players will act as murder hobos, as you'll often call it, you know, realistically not having a deep regard for how they treat others in the game and these kind of things. But in the horror space, if you're out eviling them, it provides a genuine moral incentive to correct the wrong. Like, oh shit, we do live in this world. I don't want this to happen. You know, this is a horrible circumstance. We need to do something. I think it's only in the face of utter chaos and horribleness that this true heroic behavior can emerge. It is the perfect catalyst for heroism.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is where things get hairy and controversial, because there's this mindset that's popped up in role-playing games today that you cannot affect the like mental, essentially the peace of mind of your players at the table. But when it comes to creating a genuine sense of horror at a table, it doesn't make a hill of beans if you say your character is frightened. Like, you know, you fail the save with the dragon's frightful presence, and you say, oh, your character is frightened. If the player is not frightened by your description of the dragon, it has no effect. It's just, yes. Oh, okay, my character is frightened. Oh no.
My only rebuttal against that would be some kind of a fear-based game mechanic, like you have to flee for D4 minus one rounds or something like that. But beyond that, I wholeheartedly agree with what you're saying. Mm-hmm. It is entirely up to the lens through which the game space is being viewed, you know? And the big thing with horror is it's not always horror. It's so important to note that. I like to think of it in, you have real bass drop moments, as I call them. And with that, you know, you're going to have a good triumphant, a heroic victory over some goblins, and then maybe you start getting into the orc tower and everything's going well. But then the acid gets poured on your companion, who was your healer, and now everything's gone mad, and you stack things up in a way to where you try and, I guess, create this maelstrom of confusion. And I think a lot of it is sourced in both panic and anxiety too, because mm-hmm. you have that high risk factor taking place of now there's unpredictable, undetermined elements, you know, swirling all around us. I didn't plan for that. I threw my dynamite and firebomb early. What are we doing now, guys? And then everyone has their own idea on self-preservation. And it's so important to really wrench that. I think resource management is an important, important thing in horror games, because when you run out of light and you're alone in the dark, oh boy, that's the worst place to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what I come back to when people say things like it's not fun to track your arrows, or it's not fun to keep track of torches.
It's not meant to be.
Yeah, it's not about, well, on one hand, yeah, it's not meant to be fun, but on the other hand, when you get down to those situations where you know this is your last torch, you're creating drama.
Mm-hmm.
It's a drama engine. That's what it is. And that's, you know, when we talk about these games being fun, or when we, you know, tell stories of role-playing games, when we talk about emergent narrative, that's what emergent narrative is drama that has been created by the circumstances at the table. And then the outcome of that, that's your story. It's either we ran out of torches and we got slaughtered, or we were able to use our last torch to, you know, crawl by the skin of our teeth out of the dungeon with the treasure in our hands, and it was a glorious whatever it is.
That's what it is, though. You need to climb out with the gold at the end. Sorry. Got me hyped.
Yeah, but having, you know, that moment isn't present if you're just, you know, hand waving, oh yeah, you have plenty of torches, don't worry about it.
Yes. For that very same reason, I don't do those fast travel things in game, or like you're already there across town, you know. You gotta put in the effort. I think especially emphasized in horror is pacing becomes very important, because if everything is scary, nothing is. And so you need to know how to break down those moments that aren't, as you were kind of just talking about.
Yeah.
Sorry, I got a little lost in the weeds there.
No, it's all good.
Had a good mental training.
the other thing about horror that is kind of hard in role-playing games, but something that I think is worthy of striving for, is horror is very personal. There are objective realities to horror as far as like what it should be, but horror is one of the few genres that really has this element of subjectivity in it, where certain people will find certain things frightening, and some people just don't find those things frightening. So there is this kind of personal aspect to horror, and you have to present characters with situations that really challenge them at the core of, you know, what their character is. You have to present the paladin with a situation where if you do the wrong thing here, you're a monster and you've, you know, really defied your nature. And that's this is where my second example comes in. That's one of the things that Berserk does really, really well. Without giving too much away, because I know a lot of people have pushed you to read Berserk.
I need to get on top of it. It looks exciting.
to describe the story of Berserk in the most non-spoiler way possible, it's the story of a man getting kicked in the face repeatedly by life and circumstance up to the point where he learns to kick back.
That's a beautiful story. I love that. I connect with that. I love that. And I think that is at the core of a lot of really good high octane adventuring. You know what I'm talking about? Is there is that, it's not necessarily rags to riches, but it's from total wuss to badass, you know? It's almost inherent to the genre. Oh, I can't stand when people try and start the game with, oh yeah, and I was thinking maybe I could have like a lava arm and then like three capes, and it's like, shut up, dude.
Unless you rolled that on the mutation table, no.
Exactly. You get it.
I mean, the antidote that I have to that is, okay, but people are going to freak out when they see your lava arm, and most places are going to try and burn you at the stake or something.
Precisely so. That is not how I would want to go about life, I'll say that. Especially in a harsh or unforgiving fantasy world.
But there is this element of horror, more so than any other, you know, dial that you can turn up in role-playing games, where you kind of constantly have to be taking from the players. You have to... And not in like unfair or, you know, GM fiat-y ways, but it has to be like, it's not pulling your punches. You have to be constantly hounding your players with a new, more terrifying challenge that escalates until, again, like the hope is at the very lowest point that it possibly can be. And the players then have to find it in themselves to make that heroic push.
Right, absolutely. And I think alongside that, it's very important to have those pauses and empty spaces, empty rooms, uneventful things between, because if you just try and over push the horror element, oftentimes it'll tip off that cliff and go into tropiness real quick, because there's nothing worse than, and another 8 skeletons in this room. Oh, a hellhound in the next room. Oh, but wait, a ghoul in the next room. Like, it becomes a little bit of a, what do I want to call it? Maybe a like a fair or a circus kind of thing, where you go from booth to booth and just see all the spoopy attractions. And that's not what it's about. It is about the struggle of enduring through the human condition in unfavorable circumstances, very unfavorable circumstances in some cases. And there's different levels to horror too. Don't get me wrong, I like spooky stuff. Like Halloween stuff is my jam. I love spiders and cobwebs and witches, oh my. But it's not what I'm looking for out of horror, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There is a distinct difference between spoopy, icky shock value stuff, and then truly being able to achieve the dread, the panic, the paranoia, the fears. Oh, and especially there's, I like to think that horror is a genre that in bringing to light all of these things unveils a little bit of sadness to it sometimes. There's oftentimes a morose, like, I can't help you. I'm sorry. I don't know what to do about this situation. Like helplessness. There, that's the word I'm looking for. Helplessness, but not...
Helplessness, but not entrapping.
Hopelessness. Yeah, not hopelessness. I think trapping people into shitty situations just to do it is bad DMing. I think there needs to be the voluntary plunge into horror, kind of knowing, like, I don't want to get into this, but I must. And if I win, then XYZ. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, like, true horror, as you were describing, is almost always existential in nature. It's always an attack on essentially your existence, your place in reality, your security with who you are. There's this kind of the sense that your identity and your reality and your stability is being undermined by something that is beyond your control, or seemingly beyond your control. And I think that's why Lovecraft resonates so much with me. And that's also why something like, and this is kind of an internet-y reference, but something like the Mandela Catalog.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of that?
No. I was just nodding in approval, though.
So the Mandela Catalog is a YouTube like internet horror series.
Fun.
But it's premised around these things that are called, I think they call them duplicates or maybe doppelgangers in the show, but basically they show up and they reveal knowledge that you don't want to know to you, and then basically drive you to madness and drive you to remove yourself from existence. And it's like there's jump scares, but it's not about the jump scares, and the scary imagery is not what's scary about it. It's this notion that something is convincing you that you do not deserve to exist, or that you do not exist as you think you should.
Or another one that kind of plays into that is your way of existing is wrong. I'm thinking you could do some really dark druidy stuff in that vein and all kinds of goodies. Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, and that leads me to my third example that I wanted to talk about, because there's a video game right now that I feel really does horror in video games, and you can do this in RPGs as well, in a way that really is impactful and really thought-provoking. And that's this game, Faith of the Unholy Trinity.
Is that a JRPG?
It's not.
It sounds like a JRPG.
It does, doesn't it?
It does. It has that kind of like lengthy title. I like that. That's fun. Mm-hmm. Can you say it one more time?
Faith, the Unholy Trinity.
Okay, I like that. Cool.
And it's a takeoff on, like, graphically, it's meant to, you know, mimic an Atari 2600 game.
Okay.
But it also has this, like, rotoscoping thing done with the cutscenes.
Ooh, interesting. I love rotoscope stuff. I love the way it flows and moves. Oh, there's something special to it. It's going to be a lost art one day.
I'll send you some links offline.
Please do. Because,
like, I think you would really dig this.
I'm excited.
But it's the story of it's a priest who is having to deal with the consequences of an act of cowardice where he broke his vows as a priest again, without spoiling anything. And he's having to directly confront the consequences, and that's the game.
Oh, fun. I love that concept. That's very similar to something I'm kind of working on right now, actually. Just announced it yesterday. His Heinous Harvest is based on a fairly similar concept as that. Oh, this is cool. I'm excited to learn more. Mm-hmm. Yeah, please do send me links.
And it's a game where, unlike Berserk or Predator or some of the other stuff where you're talking about, your character is not, you know, a super strong badass. But he's not helpless as things attack him. The only two controls that you have in the game are your WASD on the keyboard to move, and then if you press the space bar, you hold up your cross.
Exercise
demons.
I love that. That's awesome. I love that classic trope of the priest, like, get back, you demon. That's one of my favorite just mental images. Hey, could you cover for 1 minute? I drank way too much coffee today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank you. I'm so sorry to do this.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, that game, Faith in Holy Trinity, it's not a typical, you know, I don't talk a lot about video, well, I do talk some about video games on here. It's not the kind of game that I usually talk about. I'm a lot more of the shooty and stabby video games personally, but this game, found about it on Wendigoon's channel, for those of you who are fans of him. But now there was something really interesting about this game. I've never seen Christian horror pulled off in this way. Usually when you hear people talk about Christian horror, you get these images in your mind of like hell houses and things like that. But, you know, this game really it kind of brings something different out of it and has a very uplifting message to it, which, you know, honestly, that's all really that's the biggest thing that I as a Christian would look for in Christian media, is to really make you think about faith and really make you think about, you know, things that challenge your conceptions and having to come out on the other side. And honestly, I think it's a great template for what a Call of Cthulhu game is. So any of you out there who have played Faith the Unholy Trinity, or, you know, are familiar with the story, you're familiar with the aesthetic, especially if you're looking to kind of revamp the way that you run Call of Cthulhu, I would use that as a template. In fact, if I do ever get the chance or take the chance to run Call of Cthulhu, it'll be very much in that vein and very much, you know, after that fashion, because I feel like that's a better way to do it. Like Keelan and I were talking about here, Call of Cthulhu relies way too much on this trope of you're all going to go insane, you're all going to die. And so, you know, giving people an out, or giving people some way to overcome things, or at least, you know, allowing the players the chance to come up with that for themselves, to come up with how to actually solve the situation, I think that's what Call of Cthulhu is missing. And so, you know, if I ever take a swing at Call of Cthulhu, which, you know, maybe someday I will.
Fuck Call of Cthulhu. I'm sorry, I'm just kidding. I don't know what we were talking about, my bad.
I was kind of going into the, you know, the details of that video game a little bit more. And basically what I was saying is Faith would be the template that I would use if I were going to run Call of Cthulhu.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I could see that being, like, do you mean just as the gameplay style or the plot premise of the priest, you know, undergoing his...
Some of the plot stuff, but also just this, the idea of you have a protagonist who's not a fighter, as so many Call of Cthulhu protagonists aren't, but also this idea that there is a way to come out the other side, that the players have to find within themselves. It's not just you're going to be swallowed by the abyss. It's you're going to be swallowed by the abyss unless you find, you know, the courage to overcome this, you know, giant umbra that is, you know, presented itself over top of you.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And I think one thing I really like about role-playing games in particular and how just freeform nature they are is sometimes I really like to present my players with clean opportunities to just get out, run away. You don't have to be here. You don't have to be this hero. You can let it reside and gnaw in the back of your mind of this evil seed that's been planted, and who knows what it's sprouting into now. You might have to live with those consequences one day, but you can get out free now. Oh, the allures and temptations you can provide as a DM to take the coward's route. That's a good way of kind of instilling that horror element, is make them second guess their actions, make them unsure of self, but not belittling your players, just the characters. Right. There's a huge difference in making people feel bad because you are on a power trip and providing people with an ample sandbox to become more heroic.
Yeah, and there's that almost gets into the difference between like campaign play and one-shot play. And so many people approach horror as if, you know, we're only going to do this one session. But if you wanted to make like a viable horror campaign, I think that is an essential part of it. The consequences of actions that you perform or actions that you choose not to perform coming to fruition. Because, absolutely, you know, as I've said before on the show, there are no solutions. There are only trade-offs. So
totally agree.
Yes, you know, somewhere along the way, by making this choice, you've neglected this other choice, and that will have consequences at some point.
And I think there's something to be said for allowing players to make not just the wrong choice, but bad decisions. Let them dig their hole and then watch them as they sit in it. This is kind of where patience plays into the horror genre a little bit more, and not providing immediate solutions out. I think player innovation really strives and thrives in this kind of a condition, because you are hopeless. No one is coming to save you. You're done and doomed otherwise, unless you can do something about it. How empowering is that? It really is like the biggest catalyst towards that. I don't know what to call that spirit of overcoming a true evil.
There is, and that kind of speaks to the other tendency of a lot of role, you know, game masters who will, as soon as they kind of, you know, tighten the noose on their players, immediately show them like where the knife is sitting, or so that they can cut the rope off themselves. Whereas I think a lot of game masters, to, you know, belabor this grotesque metaphor, have to sit there, or should sit there, and let the players struggle a little bit before they start looking around and find where the knife is kept.
That's totally fair. I think there's a lot of ways to handle this situation. My personal one is I will describe that noose choking out your companion, and it's going to get tighter and they're going to turn purple. And unless you find that knife, they're just dead. And sometimes that's the way the cookie crumbles. You know, I think it's not... People pleasers cannot be good horror DMs. That's something I found for my personal experiences DMing, is it's just when you want to be, you don't want to make your friends uncomfortable or hurt or feel disempowered. That's not a good feeling. It really isn't. You have to be willing to choke them out, as we're using in this analogy. And that's kind of a hard thing to do sometimes. Like, there's sad, awkward, still moments where it's like, wow, that just happened. We just watched our friend get crucified and thrown off a cliff. That we couldn't do anything to save them. They kind of dug their own grave through one means or another. Mm-hmm. And that's not the same thing as headhunting your players because you're a spiteful jerk. I want to win. But you do need to want to win, and I love banter. Oh boy, I'll tell you. When you're dying, you're going to scream, and oh, it's going to be bad. It's going to be bad.
Yeah, and that's, it all comes down to the manner in which you're doing it. If you're doing it within the rules, if you're, you know, playing the game the way... I don't want to say the way it was intended to be played, but you're not inventing new ways for you to screw over the players. You're playing the game in good faith, but you're doing so in an adversarial manner. That's good. That creates an environment where the players are going to want to get you in the end, and then have that sense of victory when they do. It's when you start contriving ways for you to overcome them, or you start stacking the deck in your favor, or, you know, ignoring rules, fudging dice rolls, that's when you slip into this I'm just going to kill you, you're all going to die mentality, that, you know, makes the game not as fun.
Right. But when it does happen, you need to be the enforcer of that and be unforgiving in the nature thereof. Sometimes bad things just happen. And I think that's why I like to use the analogy of the lens so heavily. It's because the thing you're looking at is not the horrible thing. It's just the filter you're kind of describing and experiencing it from. And in my personal experiences DMing, I for a long time had basically cut and ripped the sanity mechanic from Call of Cthulhu and copy-pasted it over into DCC for the most part. But I've recently stopped doing that lately, because I don't think that the horror, the sanity, should be an expendable resource at all, because it trivializes what it really is. And that's a state of being and how you're interacting with it based on your own moral and emotional state of being, you know?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Now, to shift gears here a little bit, You mentioned something earlier that I want to kind of spend the rest of our time talking about here.
Yeah.
You mentioned a project that you have coming up, and you recently made a post on Facebook about giving people a preview. And if you want, I can go ahead and bring this up so that people
feel
can
free.
See it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me go ahead and bring this up. But you are looking at releasing a free PDF.
Indeed.
On Christmas.
A Christmas present.
Yep, absolutely. And it's this His Heinous Harvest, which is set in the world of Bellafalo, which is your, as you describe here, weird fiction and horror setting. That
yes,
so tell people a little bit about what they can expect from His Heinous Harvest, and then give them a little bit of detail on Bellafalo as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Could I do it in the reverse order? Is that cool? Just to kind of
absolutely.
Okay, so Bellafalo is basically this world I've invented that's a conglomeration of the dreams I've had ever since I was a little kid. I don't want to delve too much into that, but basically the vibe you can kind of expect from that is a little bit of an Age of Exploration mixed with the Westward Expanse Mountain Man era kind of thing going on there. Kind of half and half with like weird Bronze Age biblical shit. So it's a weird mix up because it's kind of in a post-apocalyptic world, but not like Fallout and not like you might be expecting. It's like ancient civilizations and kind of in that weird conspiracy theory bullshit era. So His Heinous Harvest takes place. It is, like you said, it's going to be a free PDF coming out this Christmas, my gift to the world. And what it is it ended up being a mini campaign more than a short little adventure like I was initially talking about. It's a little hefty. I'm going to have to trim some fat for sure. But what it is in a small, remote, isolated village out in the middle of nowhere, far off in the frontier, there was a little colony that was established, a little religious commune, and they were kind of isolated, nothing really going on over there, and had a spring of bad luck undertake over several, seasons, and had fallen out of faith with their initial deity, the God King Faustag. And with that, they have since designed their own faith based loosely off of what they had known as their previous religion, but have since turned it into this awful, blasphemous, agricultural chaos cult is probably the best way to describe it. And the adventure itself is multi-segmented, so it is first and foremost a kind of old school style dungeon crawl, but I have included a kind of regional hex crawl area to travel through that's actually about 200 miles, something like that, but it's not super detailed. It's not a true hex crawl adventure like some might be thinking. From there, I have a little side quest that's kind of almost a little half narrative story. It's mostly role play, but it's basically a cursed cabin and a kind of pitiful dad who's trying his hardest, but his son has this Oedipus complex and it's a nightmare. The whole cabin's cursed. Bad times to be had by all. And from there, we have several dungeon crawl style adventures, finishing up in a subterranean Burning Man styled effigy of a weird ancient god. So yeah, that's His Heinous Harvest. It is hard R, 18 plus, not for everyone, backbone required. I've held nothing back, throwing out every punch in every direction I can. It's a tribute to things like early Slipknot albums, The Hills Have Eyes, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This is my gore porn adventure, because I have kind of a game plan throughout my career, is I'm going to start with my darkest of dark stuff and progressively get more lighthearted as I continue on. But for right now, Sogan is rising, baby. It's going to be a gnarly trip. Oh, absolutely. The things, it's bad. It's bad. Give the redhead a run for her money, if you know what I mean.
Yep, absolutely. And to track kind of your progress as you roll out this, this Bellafalo adventure and all the subsequent ones, you're actually starting up the Bellafalo Underbelly
yes.
as like a development
Exactly.
Blog or blog. Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I've wanted to do for so long. Like 6 years ago yesterday, I set out on this quest because, you know, I had learned about RPG culture from online and I was like, wow, this is really cool. I think I got a deal of like 10 DCC modules as a box set. And it was a moment I was sitting in my shitty little grungy apartment. Like if I could do anything, I would want to do this. And it's like, oh, wait, maybe I can. So 6 years later, I'm finally following through with this dream of starting up a... It's a game design blog themed around kind of sneak peeks on the adventures I'm going to be writing for this awesome publishing company that's going to be coming up soon, as well as, you know, I want it to be a ever-expanding library of my own kind of stock art. So basically, as I'm creating all this material for these adventures, I want to provide the world with super cheap, affordable. So what I want to do, I don't know, we'll see if it works out or not. I'm going for it though, is I want to do just like a library card concept. You pay your cheap monthly fee of $350 and you can access the entire library and pull from it as you need. I don't even know how that works, but that's what we're going with. I want a communal environment more than I want to be getting rich off selling stock artwork. So I just want to provide people cool shit for the games I want to see played.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And let's talk a little bit about that publishing company.
You wanna?
The name you're going for here is Guts and Glory.
Yes. It was some fellow I was talking to. I don't know where it was. He was some dude. He brought it up in a talk we were having, and it just kind of sounded nice, so I snatched it. No, I'm just kidding. No, I am very eager, happy, proud, and excited to announce that Guts and Glory is not just me, but also...
Yep, Guts and Glory is also me.
Yes.
Keelan and I are going to be partnering up on this one, and in addition to His Heinous Harvest being released as a free PDF... at Christmas time, there will also be a free PDF adventure set in Nighthaven called O Night Divine.
Oh, and I'm excited. We've been talking about it. I don't want to spoil it, but you have some really good, interesting takes on classic holiday tropes. You've got a cool adventure mixed up into it, all kinds of weird magic shit. I'm excited, dude. It's going to be so much fun to illustrate. Oh. I'm excited.
Yeah, if you guys have ever wanted to see what would happen, I guess to describe it, like if Highlander met the Santa Claus, you would probably get Oh Night
Divine. I was sold on it. That's awesome. Highlander and Santa. Yeah. With a dragon.
Yep, with a dragon.
That was the thing. Dragon guaranteed.
Yep. Yes. And I believe our working title for this, at least so far, this bundle that we'll be releasing is Seasons Bleedings.
I like it.
So be on the lookout for that. We'll be doing a lot more press around that. I'm going to be making the rounds, and you are certainly welcome to join me on any of these. But as we approach December, I'm going to be going around and talking more about this because... This is my first foray into publishing. I've been, in much the same way that you've been talking about Bellafalo for years, I've been talking about Nighthaven for years. And it really did kind of take the two of us connecting with each other and finding out that we have strengths where the other has weaknesses. You know, we can kind of cover each other in that way. That really spurred, you know, Nighthaven into something that could plausibly exist. And so I'm beyond excited to see what we can do moving forward with Guts and Glory.
Me too. I know this sounds weird, but I've got to thank you for giving me this, I don't know, the impetus, the drive to actually follow through with it. Because for a while, you know, I got into RPGs because I love RPGs. And then I was like, okay, this is cool. I don't know if I'll spend my entire career here, but I love this space. I love gaming out here. And I've always wanted to create my own stuff. And then kind of my other art dreams fell apart because I initially wanted to get into like video game design and stuff, but that's a shit industry. I don't want to work there with a 10-foot pole. That's garbage. That's worse than cubicle work. No, no, no. Sorry, that's a little vile, but and so I kind of lost motivation for a while because it's like, okay, I still want to do my own stuff, but I don't know why I'm going through this artsy thing. And then just talking with you with that last interview we did really sparked something of like, you know, I'd fixed my entire life around this, but I didn't have that courage to go forward. And sometimes you just need a friend. And that's what it came down to, is I have so many good friends and mentors and wonderful people, but I think Bellafalo and Nighthaven have a little bit of a, I don't want to call it a kindred spirit. I wouldn't do that to you. Bellafalo is gross. I don't want to fucking live there. But, you know, I understand a little bit of Nighthaven. I feel like I can see it in my eye, and I'm so excited to be working with you and, you know, back and forth. And, oh, so much good stuff. I just feel like this is meant to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's an interesting dynamic between our settings. That I feel has emerged. Nighthaven, in a lot of ways, is something that on the outside looks enticing, something that, you know, very much invites people in. But just underneath the surface, there's a lot of darkness and a lot of dark secrets. Whereas Bellafalo, I feel in what you've described to me, it's almost like this kind of desolate space where it seems as if there is no hope, but just underneath the surface, there's this spark of something. And so they're kind of like mirror opposites of each other.
They are. And we have such a yin-yang dynamic with like everything. Yes. It's exciting, honestly, because it's, you know, I'm going to be, how do I word this? I'm going to have so many opportunities to draw cool shit for you that I wouldn't have to do for Bellafalo just because it doesn't work the same. You know, it's not the same world. They're not thematically the same. But the vibe in a lot of what we talk about is so connected that I feel just the cross-pollination between worlds, between consumers of our product and these kind of things, like, oh, it's going to be beautiful what ends up blossoming from this garden of creativity. Because, like, you know, a lot of people have talked to me over the years about creating RPGs, not people in industry, meaning, I mean, just random friends, you know, people that I've gamed with, that kind of stuff. And it seems like everyone has cool ideas, but very few people are willing to follow through with it and actually put in the work and learn the material. Like, you've done your due diligence. It is an honor and a pleasure to be working with you. It's nice to have peers to talk to about game design shit, you know? I love it.
And likewise with you, because my whole struggle has always been, I can see something in my head. I can see something cool up here. And I can write and I can describe it. It's the visual aspect that I can't recreate. I mean, I shared that god-awful attempt at a dragon drawing with you.
It's not the worst I've seen. Sometimes I get turned in like, hey, make this map for me. And I'm sitting there like, I'm embarrassed to ask, but rooms 1 through 27, what's going on here? And it's a 30-room dungeon.
And, like, I was pretty much resigned to going the route of having, you know, like, freelancers work on it. And you were on my list of freelancers to reach out to, but then the more that we talked and the more that I found that you are passionate about kind of the era of history that I pull heavily from in Nighthaven, it convinced me that, like, you know, you need to be the primary visual driver of Nighthaven, because other people, you know, will be able to produce good quality drawings of Nighthaven, but it's a spirit and a passion kind of that I have that I don't know that anyone else could replicate in the art. And plus your art's amazing. So, you know, I feel incredibly blessed to be working with you as well.
I know what you mean. There's no substitute for curry powder. good things are brewing. I'm excited. We have cool stuff on the horizon. Like, guts and glory, dude. We're doing it. We're following through. This is the start of something beautiful.
Yep. Yeah, and that's not just a name for those of you out there who are hearing this for the first time. Guts and Glory is kind of our ethos of gaming. Like, it's our attempt to describe a play style that is not tied specifically to one particular game, one particular time period. It is an attitude which you can approach all of role-playing with.
Smile as you're getting punched in the face. You have a sword in your hand. Yeah. It's kind of, I feel, what it boils down to at some level or another is, you know, it's gonna be hardships, but you can overcome them if you're willing.
Absolutely.
Usually with Dice God's will.
Yeah, and so moving forward, you guys can expect a lot more or to hear a lot more from both myself and from Wonky.
Yes.
About what we're working on. Like I said, I'm going to be making the rounds in December, and hopefully you'll be able to join me on a couple of those shows.
I would love to. And then along with that, it's going to be really cool. We'll talk more about details in the future, of course, but I'm going to be sharing so much of this progress and work in progress updates, you know, throughout the creation process that I think there's going to be a real tangible thing for people to get behind and support and really, you know, hurrah for our projects, you know. I'm excited because this is a really good, I've been very hesitant to jump back in the social media circus for a couple years now, because even as I was getting through my self-doubt issues and all that bullshit, there was still kind of like a, okay, well, now I'm a better person, but I have nothing to really show for it. It looks like I quit my art career 3 years ago. What am I doing here? And so this has been the perfect way of just introducing myself back in as a regular, let's call it. So yeah, lots of good things beyond the horizon there.
Yep. And my my development updates will not be as visually appealing as Keelan's, just by nature of the kind of work that I'm doing. But those of you who do want to track that progress, that a lot of that is going to be living on my Substack. Mostly. In fact, actually, all of it is going to be on the premium end of my Substack, because there's going to be a lot of stuff that won't be quite ready for public consumption, but I do want to share my progress. So that's going to be something coming for paid subscribers to my Substack only.
Heck yeah, dude.
The same way that Keelan is doing.
Sign me up. You said that's at Substack, right? At Rollin' Bones?
Rollinbones.substack.com.
Okay, heck yeah, I'm excited. Sign me up, baby. That's going to be a good time. I like how we're both doing kind of our design blog thing, as well as actually coming together for a nice finished project. I think that's really cool, because between the two of us, we're going to have a variety of updates and cool schnaz to be showing the peoples.
Yep.
Ah.
Absolutely. Man, this is...
I'm hyped, dude. Like, I know I'm being all goon, but, like, it's just... I don't know. Something about it feels right. There's magic in the air. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Oh, it's totally random, but the coolest thing I've ever seen in the world last night happened. So I was standing on my deck. I was coming back in from doing laundry, and the moon was such a brilliant orange, and it was glowing across the ocean surface, and I could only see it through the like falling leaves of the maple tree out in front of my house, and it almost looked like a skull in front of the orange moon, and it was the most haunting shit I've ever seen in my life. That alone, I stood there for like 5 minutes, like, oh, like I thought I was going to werewolf out or something, bite my neighbor's dog. Nothing happened, but except the dog biting. That's normal.
Yeah. Oh. Well, you did almost get mauled by wolves the other day, so I guess werewolf
is into all kinds of crazy stuff, dude. I love it. That's a thing. I think, too, I wasn't going to really bring this up or hammer it home, but on the topic of horror, actually, is Lovecraft said it best in that searchers after horror haunt far strange places, I believe is the quote. And with that, My attitude towards this genre isn't this negative Debbie Downer thing. I see that so often. There's this evil, mean nihilism that backs the horror genre, but I don't find that to be the case with my own work. Now, there is obviously some nastiness going on, but I think that actually going out and facing the world with an adventurous mindset, going up mountains and exploring back alleys, and you know, there's something to be said about the experiences gained, because then you can take that home with you. I remember the smells of those fetid old dumpsters, you know, and that leaking ooze behind the building that North Texas is housed in. If you've walked around the backside of that building, there's these leaky old dumpsters. There's nothing more rancid than the smell of those ones in particular. You know, you can bring that home with you. I remember just the other day, I was up mountain running, and I decided, as you were just kind of bringing to light, I decided to go off trail like a moron. I live in the middle of nowhere, Alaska, and ended up like going through the woods. And I was like, I know there's a trail somewhere down there. I'll find it. And ended up like locked in by waterfalls. And I slid down this big slope and ended up at this nasty, marshy little kind of grotto-esque area thing going on. It was like behind the waterfall. It was more of like a trickling, not a Niagara Falls thing. And there was wolf scat and remains everywhere. And oh man, that was horrible. But I can take that back with me. And so I think to be a true purveyor of horror, you need to bring your own fears into it. You need to bring those, that sense of panic, because you can't give that directly to the people at the game table. You can't instill an emotional response like that, because there is that threat, that looming. You get sweaty, you tighten up, it's harder and harder to breathe, your head's racing, you don't know what's really going on, you're in that blurred panic, everything's moving so fast. You can't really do that at the game table. So I think there's two pans, I guess, of horror. There's what I like to call the cold pan and the hot pan, and knowing how to slurp the meal back and forth between the two, because horror, like hot horror would be you're being chased down by the monster at that given point in time, you know, it just shredded your companion. Cold horror is like you're underneath the floorboards looking up and they're talking about you. You don't like what you're hearing, but if you move, you know, something bad might happen. And knowing how to interplay and mix between the two, because if you only do one, you get back into that tropey nast.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a balancing act.
It really is.
It's tension, payoff, back and forth, until you kind of reach the ultimate payoff of the ultimate tension. And each of them has to serve the other. So it really, ultimately, it comes down to balancing scales. And when you do that successfully, you create a tense atmosphere at your table. One that means you don't have to say, we're playing a horror game and turn all the lights down and play by candlelight and do your little dread Jenga tower over top of an oil drip pan like someone told me they did one time. You don't have to make the room scary. It's scary. The lights are on, you know, everyone's can see each other. Everyone's familiar with the environment. It's scary because the tension is making it scary. Yeah. And that's that, you know, that's the magic bullet to horror. It's not something that you can just, you know, set. You have to build it. You have to tend it like a garden, or, you know,
like a garden.
Yeah,
absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you, dude, on that. Cause like, there's nothing worse than, now I almost have a counterexample in Predator in that it's kind of just thrown upon the party and constantly persisting, but I think it relies on those breaks when it is not chasing the party actively, that almost the horror is at its highest. Like I'm thinking that scene when Billy gets his spine ripped. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. That's one of the scariest scenes in that movie. Party's nowhere near the Predator. You know, Nyouch is way far away.
And even like Jesse Ventura letting loose with the minigun, and then all that they get from that is a little trickle of blood.
Like, yeah. Right.
That's horrifying.
That's horrifying. Oh, there's so many good examples too. And like, I think theme can go a long way, but a lot of what really makes it into the tipping point of horror instead of just spooky is that the feeling of the repercussions need to be had hard and initially. It's not necessarily a shock value thing, but it's this is an odd analogy, but getting jumped as you go around a corner, you know what I mean? You just flurry of blows all around you. You don't know what's happening. It's discordant and unorganized, and multiple things are happening that are harder and harder for players to juggle. Because you have your resources, you have your health points, you have everything else, but now there's all these foreign objects kind of in the midst and swarming around, and it's really about finding where they break and then prying into it. And with that comes oftentimes not necessarily taboo, but the uncanny, the icky, the nasty things that like no one's there to really talk about. I mean, if you're there at D&D to hear and his guts rip open, black steam begins to emerge, I mean, cool, but like that's, you know, supplementary, yeah. Not core.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like spice in a good meal. If it's the only thing you taste, it's, you know, you've ruined the meal. But if it's one of the elements and it's a particularly strong element alongside others, then it really adds something to the experience.
Right. And, you know, it doesn't need to be a big, complex, myriad, emotional, romantic interest, everything going on. I'd say Bellafollo realistically is... If I was to compare it to a food, it would be a hunk of salami that's been rolled in black pepper. I know that sounds weird. The spices I add in aren't all too crazy, you know? It's mostly just horror, high-octane schnaz going on, but it's wrapped around this core of people going out, people slaying monsters in a strange, scary location, retrieving their treasure, and being able to hopefully extract it back to their original point or wherever they're going afterwards. You know, there is that feedback loop of the game that is always present.
Absolutely.
And that's why rules are important.
Yes they are. Well, with that, we are kind of at the end of our time here. But yeah, I love having you on. Now that we're officially you know, for public knowledge, working together, we definitely need to do this more often.
Yeah, for sure.
Have some conversation. We need to get Ben on here with us.
I want to talk to Ben Barsh. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I love that dude to death. He's one of my favorite people. Absolutely. Yes, we need to rope him into a conversation and see what he thinks, because he has such a good perspective on so many things in the RPG industry, both inside and out. And he is one of the best resources that I have available to me about like 5th edition and modern gaming. And a big thing with what we're doing with Guts and Glory isn't old school centric. We are trying to appeal to good gaming more so than a predefined niche or crowd or anything of that nature. So let's talk to Ben.
Yeah, I think the best way to describe what we're doing, and this will definitely make us sound overly ambitious the way I say this,
we're
trying to redefine the next generation of gaming, because gaming is in the wilderness right now. And so I'm honestly hoping that what we can do here is show to people our age and younger this way. This is the way. This is how we're going to do this. This is how we're going to keep this thing alive.
And we're not trying to take over anybody's gaming scene or anything like that. We're not trying to, you know, ruin what you have or yuck your yum. That isn't the point. We just want a place where we can get good or get wrecked, bitch. That's kind of what it comes down to. It's like, we're just going to have our own space up on our own hill where we build these cool castles. And if you want to participate in Guts and Glory style gaming, fuck yeah. Sorry about the language. Do it though. Yeah, that's the thing. Is like, please, we want anyone and everyone who likes this stuff to be here. Is the biggest thing. Is like, you know, if you're gonna come and be like, oh, everyone's dying left and right, this is horrible, it's not gonna be for you. But it's for us, and I'm willing to die on that hill.
Yep.
Guts and Glory.
It's very important to emphasize we are not coming for anyone's initials.
Except, I'm just kidding. List. Turn me into a modern rapper. I'm just going to go down the hit list of people I'm gunning for.
Yep. All right, well, guys, that's
starting with you, Skeeter Green.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Skeeter's going down.
Skeeter going down. I love it. Dude, absolutely. It's so much fun talking to you.
Likewise. I love having conversations with you. Mm-hmm. Well, guys, that's going to do it for Rolling Bones this evening. Like I said, next week is Halloween. I will be trick-or-treating with my daughter, dressed as Steve Irwin, so I will not be here. November, we are looking at, full schedule in November. Won't do a show the week of Thanksgiving. But just to kind of give you guys a preview of something that I've got set up, at some point in November, DM Blackwall will be back on the show, and we will be talking about the concept of sectarian conflict and war in role-playing games, using the English Civil War as our point of reference. So those of you who are history buffs, those of you who want to know how to include the Clash of Arms in role-playing games, those of you who just want to hear two dudes geek out about a topic that you don't know much about, that'll be a stream for you. I am setting up other shows for November, but that's going to be one of the big ones there at the end of the month. So I hope you guys will join me for those and all the other ones that we'll be doing. But until then, whether you rolled a 1 or a 20, I'm so glad that you rolled your bones with me, Ryan Howard, and I will see you guys.
Thanks for hanging. Absolutely. Meow.